Hi, everybody. Joanne, compulsive overeater. And just to let you know, I've pulled up a Word document because I've written this out because I'm very nervous. And so you'll see me, but I won't see you. I'll see what I'm going to say. So first of all, I am a compulsive overeater. And today I've been asked to share my experience, strength, and hope around victimization and recovery. Before I begin, I'd like to say a prayer to invite God into this experience. I am the space where God shines through. He and I are one, not two. I need not worry, fret, or plan. He wants me where and as I am. And if I stay relaxed and free, he will carry out his plans for me, with me, through me, and in me. As Joy said, my journey in OA began almost 50 years ago in the spring of 1973. I was 30 years old. I weighed about 180 pounds. I was a yo-yo dieter. I had three children, 7, 8, and 9. I was depressed, overwhelmed, and full of shame for all the ways I'd failed to be the wife, mother, and person I thought I could be. Gosh, once I'd gotten married and was free to create the family I had yearned for, rather than the abusive, dysfunctional one that I was born into. Our best friends, Tom and Carol, were dealing with alcoholism, and he went into treatment at AA. We were closely involved with Tom and went to open AA meetings and gatherings of his AA friends in their home. It didn't take me long to realize that I felt the same way about food and my need for it as Tom did alcohol. Two Al-Anon women had heard about OA and decided to start a meeting in our town, and I joined them. For a long time, it was just the three of us, the big book, the AA 12 and 12, and a few OA pamphlets, and a food plan. It was a very restrictive food plan, and I tried everything I could think of to get around it. But I really wanted recovery, and so I surrendered to following the plan and working the steps. I did completely give myself to this simple program, and my life changed dramatically. I lost 60 pounds in 6 months. But even more miraculous to me was that it was through working these steps with a sponsor and telling her my secrets that I had, and beyond both of those miracles was that my understanding of God changed from the disapproving, disappointed, observing, non-intervening God of my childhood into a loving, supportive, involved, and caring God who empowered me to abstain and was always with me, doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. We started several meetings in our town. OA grew and we were reaching out. I'd never driven beyond a very small radius, drove into Chicago and other big cities to be with the larger OA fellowship. I attended out-of-state OA conventions and retreats. I was a speaker and led retreats. I gave service in lots of different ways. My husband encouraged me to do whatever I needed or wanted to do in OA. I think he was grateful to see that I, who had pretty much hidden myself away in the house since our marriage, was now engaged, purposeful, and happy. After many years in OA, I felt the need to go farther out into the world. I got a full-time job in a hospital psychiatric ward, the same one I'd been in a patient in when I was 22. I found I loved the work. Again, with my husband's encouragement, I decided to go to nursing school to fulfill a lifelong dream. My kids were in high school by that time, and I was a busy mom. I had so many worthwhile things to do that I thought I no longer had time for OA. My participation dwindled until it was gone. I continued to talk to my two friends that had been with me from the beginning and decided that would work well enough. I started school in 1980 and felt like I had dived into the deep end of the pool and had no idea how to swim. Gradually, food reclaimed its old place in my life. I'd let go of OA. Now food and fear pried my hand out of God's. I was alone with my nemesis. I put on over 120 pounds to cope with my need to be the best in order to cover up the dread of not being good enough. I got straight A's in school and was in the top of my class all throughout. I drove myself relentlessly. If I missed a question on a test, I would agonize over it. I was in the school choir, class president for 2 years, and student body president, chaired and worked on all the fundraiser, worked part-time in the hospital to help pay for tuition. Then I'd come home, cook dinner every night, maintain a house, had all the holiday celebrations and birthdays for my big extended family. Meanwhile, resenting my kids and husband for not helping me enough and blaming them and everybody else for my unhappiness. Of course, I wouldn't ask for their help or approve of the way they did it when they would pitch in. I refused to rage and be like my mother. So instead, I seethed with silent scorn, using more and more food to push the fear, anger, loneliness, and pain down, and then ate more to cover the shame of being fat. I remember thinking that I'd be allowed to achieve academically because no one would perceive me as a person to envy or hurt because of my size. When it came time to graduate, we were all to wear the same nurse's uniform for our picture and the ceremony. But by then I wore a size 22, weighed 232 pounds, and my uniform had to be custom made. I felt so humiliated. All my accomplishments and the only special thing about me was that I was the biggest person in school. I joined a pay and weigh and lost about 60 pounds in 6 weeks. I also lost a lot of hair and money, but I graduated in a size 14 and had my picture retaken. Of course, I regained that and more when I began to work as an RN in the hospital. I also went back to smoking. I'd had no confidence in myself and worried constantly about my ability to do my job. I wound up on the 3 to 11 shift and was even more isolated from family and friends. I had no social life at all. I started adding alcohol to my midnight relaxation time after work. I needed to numb out and get mellow even faster than food would do it. I knew I needed OA, but each time I would go back, I just wasn't willing to be there. During those years of internal misery and external people-pleasing and always saying yes and believing I was responsible for the whole world and all the people in it, our kids all got married. When my first granddaughter was born, I quit my job, I got a therapist, and I began to face the emotional pain of the impact of my abusive childhood home, particularly the sexual abuse. I estranged myself from my parents, but I was adamant that I would never again sweep their crimes aside and forgive and forget. Of course, when the walls went up, most of my siblings stood on the other side with my parents. Some managed to accept my decision, but many pushed me to come back into the fold. I developed new relationships with those who accepted my choice and let the others go. Therapy had helped me face the truth and the pain and be able to establish boundaries, but I still wasn't free. I wouldn't forgive. In January of 1995, I walked back into the doors of OA. We'd moved to Tucson from our hometown in Illinois 6 months before. At that time, we had seven grandchildren who were the joy of my life. I had what I had always longed for, a loving family. Bob had lost his job in the downsizing that wiped out the jobs of so many in his company and in other companies. Within a few months, he had a triple bypass and then decided we should move to Tucson. I agreed out of fear. Our economic security was gone. My emotional security was shattered by his near-death experience. Now I was being asked to give up my connection to my kids and grandkids and move 1,500 miles away from them. My life was unmanageable in every possible way. After 15 years of living back in the food obsession, compulsion, and unmanageability of my life, my desperation was greater than my resistance. So on January 1995, I went to OA, but I wasn't desperate to be relieved of my food and my self-will. What I was desperate for was the fellowship of safe people who would let me cry and talk and share my fear, anger, loneliness, and pain, who would accept me, and where I had the protection of anonymity. This time around, in a way, I complied, but I didn't surrender. I would get a sponsor and tell her what food plan I would follow because I knew that it was unhealthy to be so restrictive in my eating plan. Of course, working steps 4 through 9 around my family of origin was off the table. So in other words, I would let OA support me in working my program my way. After all, I had had such miraculous recovery years before, and I could still quote the big book, chapter and verse. On January 6th of 1995, I weighed 205 pounds. I quickly went up to 220 plus, then proceeded to yo-yo up and down. When I got on the scale on January 7th, 2007, I discovered that I weighed exactly 205 pounds, that what I had to show for being in OA for 12 years, giving service, going to meetings, using the tools, working the steps, well, sort of working the steps, I weighed exactly 205 pounds. I'd been paying attention every day to my eating, and I was right where I was 12 years before, except for one detail. had gained and lost well over 600 pounds in those 12 years. And I saw the facts before me in black and white. The truth of my powerlessness over this disease finally got through my denial. I could not recover on my own. I could not get well with the mind of an active alcoholic addict. I needed the help of a power greater than myself. I went to an OA meeting, asked someone to sponsor me, and was willing to do whatever she asked of me. I worked the steps under her guidance. I stopped saying never regarding my family of origin and began to say maybe someday, just not today. I've struggled to let go. My surrender has been inch by inch. I would say and believe that I completely give myself and my will over to the care of God, but then find a sticking point with some food or eating behavior or cling to a character defect. And although I'd known for many years that the only solution for me was to completely give myself to this simple program, I still wouldn't, couldn't, didn't do it. Half measures availed me temporary relief, but not full recovery, remission. There are many forms this disease takes, and it's progressive. The way compulsive overeating is manifested in me today probably comes under the heading of binge eating disorder. During a binge, I would eat large quantities of food at a time. My last binge was on February 1st of 2018. What was different that night was that I wrote down exactly what I'd eaten and the approximate calories of that episode. Within about 20 minutes, I'd consumed a variety of 15 different items for an approximate total of 8,800 calories. The physical consequences were severe headache, heart palpitations, unrelenting muscle cramping in my feet, ankles, and legs, extreme abdominal distension to the extent that I was fearful that the mesh of my abdominal hernia repair would tear. I couldn't sleep for a couple of days. The mental and emotional pain consisted of shame, self-hate, self-disgust, miserable and utter demoralization, remorse, and defeat. Of course, I had experienced all of that misery after previous binges, but the truth was on paper this time in black and white. What I realized on the morning of February 2nd, 2018, was that I was allowing myself the privilege of binging when I felt overwhelmed with anger and when my PTSD would kick in, when I felt enraged. But what I experienced in that binge was the reality of the extreme violence that eating like that really was. I was being far more abusive to myself than anyone had ever been to me. And I could not or would not ever do that much harm to anyone else. So I let God have that destructive eating behavior, and he's taken it. And I'm now empowered and free not to binge today, not to harm myself with food. Most days I eat 3 moderate, nutritious, delicious meals and nothing else. I enjoy the food I eat and don't feel at all deprived. My husband sits beside me every night and enjoys his treats, and it doesn't bother me. I have let go of over 100 pounds and have been at this weight for several years. I don't drink alcohol. I haven't smoked for 26 years. I have a loving relationship with my family. We've been blessed with 3 children, 9 grandchildren, 9 great-grandchildren, 2 of which have been born this summer and we got to hold and see and love. My husband and I celebrated our 60th anniversary this month, and I'll soon be turning 79. We've been snowbirds for the last 8 years, right now getting ready to come back to Tucson from Missouri. It's been a long process to be able to digest the truth of my experience as a child and to feel the feelings I couldn't cope with then. I could only push them away with food and use the flawed survival skills I developed. I was sexually abused by my father from the age of 10 until I left home. I thought I was the only person in the world that this had ever happened to. Over the years, I came to find out that almost all my 6 younger sisters had been abused by my father, and also one of his grandchildren, his granddaughters. And then I learned that my 3 brothers had each been abused, one by a Boy Scout leader, one by a priest, and another at a private boys' boarding school. One of my brothers committed suicide. One weighs almost 400 pounds, and one is suffering mental illness and drug addiction and has left his family, and no one knows his whereabouts. One of my sisters died at age 50 from drug use. One is dying from obesity-related illness. All of my sisters are obese and suffering from the long-term effects of not being able to deal with the hand we were dealt in life. I've worked through all my steps several times, always with a sponsor's help and guidance. I've made my amends to everyone, even those when hell freezes over ones. I've forgiven everyone, I've cleared away the wreckage of my past, which I find has been very helpful as my life goes on, and positive and negative events continue to happen because, of course, that's how life works. In 2013, we left Tucson and moved back to the Midwest in order to be closer to our family. Ironically, this move coincided with my middle son's arrest. This was an incredible shock to us. It was for a reprehensible crime and subsequently is now serving a 20-year sentence in a federal prison. These last 8 years have been a journey of grief, fear, anger, isolation, and continuing growth through the pain and the hope that this program of recovery has given me. I had no idea how my higher power was going to bring me through it, but here I am, absolutely living my life on life's terms. Over and over, I reverted to self-reliance, but I'm powerless, and only reliance on God can empower me. Until I move from here and the pain of grief, moved from Tucson and the pain of grief over our son, I had a relationship with God that seemed sufficient, but I discovered I needed my God to be much bigger, to have more dominion over my life. I was still trying to manage my unmanageable life by self-hate, self-will, self-reliance, self-seeking, and self-pity. Today, I believe my God has me in his loving care, and I have only to be patient and let go of the non-acceptance and expectations because he is big enough to manage my life and will do for me what I cannot do for myself. This brings me up to the day Joy asked me to give this talk. The topic on the flyer titled Victimization sent me reeling. I was filled with panic and an underlying feeling I couldn't name. I felt barely able to breathe and wanted only to disappear. It was the beginning of the Labor Day weekend and we had company. I turned to my program to help me. I asked God to take these intense feelings from me and allow me to be in the present moment, for my head to be where my feet were. Once our company left, I did a fourth step and identified so many components of my old ways of thinking, my character flaws, people-pleasing, denial, low self-esteem, fear, dishonesty, self-pity, and self-seeking. I then knew the next step was the fifth. I needed to talk to someone safe, and I did that, expressing all the emotions and twisted thinking to my trusted friend. This helped me recognize that I was suffering from shame, fear of others' judgment, and just really being called a victim, you know? Being exposed as someone who came from ugliness, from abuse, from not being cherished, someone who doesn't belong around normal people. I was helped to recognize that these were the feelings and beliefs I had run away from as a child, when I had sought to protect myself, my family, our reputation, and my sanity with everything available to me, mostly by using these character defects and food. I saw that this was an opportunity to make the choice to be the woman I want to be, not a victim, not someone who carried all the shame of others' behaviors, but a woman of grace and dignity who no longer had to pretend in order to believe she could belong and to know that my higher power knows and loves me just as I am. That I do not have to regret the past or shut the door on it, that my experience can benefit others if I'll just share it. So the way I work the eighth and ninth step around this is to tell you my experience of being a victim. I have made amends to the silent child who took the weight of others' misdeeds upon herself and owned the shame that wasn't hers. Step four gave me courage. Step five gave me integrity. Step six gave me willingness to be changed. Step seven gave me a vision of what I might be if I let God have all of me. Step eight gave me the discipline to do this work, forgive myself. And nine gave me the humility to share myself with all of you today and to see that I owed myself living amends because I was the one heaping the shame on my head and it was time to put an end to that. No one else in the world treated me the awful way I treated myself. To counteract the sting of being a victim, I came up with some other words that start with the letter V that I would like to be associated with now. Vulnerability, victory, valor, value, voice, and vision. The journey of recovery is not something that happens quickly for me. I don't like going through the pain of life, but I know it's been my path to freedom, joy, peace, and love. On page 542 in the third edition of the Big Book is the story in the story He Who Loses His Life comes this quote: there are only two sins, The first is to interfere with the growth of another human being. The second is to interfere with one's own growth. I'm not responsible for what others have done, but I am responsible for what I do to myself. And just for today, I'm willing to abstain from compulsive overeating, stop shaming myself, and stop interfering with my own growth. Thank you.